the headlines, Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei blames the United States and Israel for masterminding the recent riots in the country. North Korea's latest ballistic missile launch draws warnings of a tough response from the South, Japan, and the United States. Plus, the upper house of Russia's parliament approves laws on the integration of four Ukrainian regions into the Russian Federation. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories of this hour. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the recent riots in the country were plotted by the United States, Israel, and their paid agents. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the comments in an address to military cadets in Tehran. The leader said that he was saddened by the death of a young woman, which triggered the riots. He said that reaction to the incident, including insecurity on the streets and burning of the Holy Quran and mosques, were not normal. Ayatollah Khamenei said the death of the young woman was a pretext for some foreign governments to foment insecurity and rioting. The leader added that such governments cannot tolerate Iran's progress in power. Ayatollah Khamenei described those governments as bullies, saying that they are taking aim at Iran's independence and resistance in power. UK-based political analyst Masoud Shajadeh says the tragic death of Mahsa Amini has been used as a pretext by Iran's adversaries to instigate rioting in Iran.
It is a very sad affair of loss of the life of a young woman. But this is not the issue. This has been an excuse for rioting, killing people, burning security officers, and burning buildings, etc., etc. And, you know, it's very clear for a very long time opponents of Iran, the regime in occupied Palestine, United States and Saudis and have been saying very clearly that they are set to create disharmony, they are there to actually create havoc within Iran and create this type of thing. And even when we hear the maximum pressure is a catalyst for creating the environment when this sort of thing could take place. This is really trying to create a sort of havoc that was indeed implemented in Libya, in Syria, and elsewhere. This is actually trying to destroy the whole infrastructure and bring such insecurity, which will affect every Iranian, be it their supporter or opponent of any issue whatsoever.
Iran's president says people's million-strong turnout in the protests against the recent riots foiled the enemy's plots during the unrest. Ebrahim Raisi echoed the Monday remarks by a leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, saying that the U.S. and Israel hatched a plot to hinder Iran's advancements. The president added that the enemy is angered by the progress Iran has made despite threats and sanctions. The riots erupted over the death of a young woman in a police station late September. Days later, Iranians held nationwide rallies to condemn the street violence. Muslims in London have rallied to denounce the recent Islamophobic violence in the British capital amid ongoing anti-Iran riots. Following the death of Iranian woman Mahsa Amini, several Western anti-Iran groups have staged anti-Iran demonstrations in European cities in which Muslims and police have been attacked. Our correspondent in London, Robert Carter, reports.
Muslims in London were compelled to mobilize outside an Islamic center on Saturday following recent Islamophobic violence by anti-Iran protesters. On Sunday, the 25th of September, London witnessed an outpouring of anti-Muslim attacks as protesters claiming to support Mahsa Amini were filmed attacking Shia Muslims commemorating Arba'een and the Iranian Islamic Center of England following clashes with police outside Iran's embassy.
Last week, our mosque was attacked. Our procession was attacked. People were attacked that weren't even Iranian, had nothing, they didn't know anything about what was going on. And it impedes our freedom of religion in this country.
Protests over the death of Amini, a 22-year-old Iranian woman who fell to the floor at a police station on September the 16th, started shortly after her death was announced. Those protests soon turned into violent riots, with masked people attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism and desecrating religious sanctities, including hijab burnings. Dissident groups outside of Iran were quick to board the bandwagon, engaging in violent protests throughout Europe, especially in London and Paris.
We've got people not of an Iranian origin, but in fact of multinational origin who've come out here to direct their anger to these people who are loaded with anti-Islamic people, LGBT people, and all elements which are anti-Islam who've come out here to side with an event which has happened in Iran, but really they don't care about that event.
Saturday's demonstration passed by peacefully without any major incidents occurring. However, locals informed me that they remained deeply concerned that future attacks may take place. They also informed me that they were deeply frustrated that the local authorities who failed to protect the community. Robert Carter, London.
Canada has imposed fresh sanctions on 34 Iranian individuals and entities over alleged human rights violations. The sanctions list announced by the Canadian Foreign Minister includes 25 people, as well as 9 entities, including the English news network Press TV. The move comes a week after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau pledged to impose sanctions on the Iranian government. It is not the first time that Canada has come up with such measures against Iran, with which it does not have any diplomatic relations. Ottawa in the past has blacklisted around 200 Iranian entities and individuals. To discuss that further, we're joined by Arnold August, author and journalist, who's joining us live from Montreal. Mr. August, if you could please tell us more about why and under what kind of rationale does Ottawa sanction Iranians, blacklist Iranians, and other entities such as news network Press TV without even providing explanations, considering the fact that Canada has no diplomatic relations with Iran?
Well, allow me to say, firstly, that a day after the announcement by the Canadian government to sanction Press TV, I'm very proud to be broadcasting with you today from Montreal as a member of the International Manifesto Group and as contributing editor to the Canada Files, both of which are fully supportive of the Iranian Revolution and government. Now, you ask about the rationale, it's simple. Just go to the State Department. The Canadian government, over the last few years with regards to many countries, but specifically with regards to Iran, they simply use the US State Department and White House talking points against Iran. So that is the pretext, that is so-called repression of women in Iran. Interesting, coming from a country, Canada, a colonial settler state that is now famous throughout the world for having committed and still commits genocide against the native peoples in our country, they are in a position, a moral position, to judge Iran with regards to the question of human rights. I mean, it is basically a regime change effort pushed forward by the United States and Canada, unfortunately, as a very close and faithful ally of the United States is following through on it by adding these sanctions yesterday. And it's going to get worse because the minister, Jolie, who announced these sanctions yesterday, said that there will be more. And in the Liberal Party, there are critics who are saying, well, Canada's not doing enough. They should have done this before. There should be more sanctions against Iran. So as the United States is doing, the Canadian government and the Canadian Parliament is ratcheting up the disinformation, major lie
that repression is taking place in Iran, and the woman whose name as the victim, it was murdered by the Iranian morality police, which is false. So many Twitter feeds and videos have surfaced that shows very clearly that she did not die as a result of any physical harm against her. But the way the U.S. and Canadian mainstream media and government operate, they don't care about the facts. They just repeat lie after lie after lie. And how many wars have been started by their lies? Well, there was the weapons of mass destruction, and now, of course, with regards to Ukraine and Russia, all the lies against Russia to act as a pretext for NATO-U.S. aggression against Russia. And now we have Iran on the international scene once again. So it's very important, and I can assure you myself, you have other collaborators amongst us Canadians, that is Camila Escalante, and I think Ken Stone from Canada also collaborates with you. We are not being backed down. We are not intimidated. There's something funny here. They say that Canada is imposing a prohibition on dealings rated to the individuals and entities such as Press TV and their assets. So, you know, am I an asset of Press TV in Canada? Well, I'm not. If I am, fine. I agree with that. I voluntarily do broadcast in interviews with you. So are they going to freeze me, a Canadian citizen, because I'm dealing with Press TV? There are a lot of issues involved, and I think I'll be getting in touch with a lawyer on this within the next day or two, who will help us clarify this thing with regards to the implications legally regarding people such as myself and others who collaborate with Press TV.
So, Mr. August, of course, the name Press TV did come up quite a couple of times, and actually I myself was quite surprised to see a news network being sanctioned. What are we being sanctioned for reporting what we see on the ground? I mean, this raises a very big question mark. Other entities might be somehow involved in certain activities that might be related to human rights issues, but how can a news network be responsible for a country being or not observing human rights?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, because unlike the other entities mentioned, you are a press outlet, a broadcaster. So, you know, so the only conclusion we could reach is that Canada is sanctioning Press TV because Press TV dares to tell the truth about what is happening in Iran at this time. You know, but Canada is not you in censoring other outlets. For example, when an important meeting took place a few years ago in Ottawa with regards to the Lima Group's attempt to overthrow Maduro in Venezuela in Ottawa, the Canadian government disallowed Telesur to come to Canada to report on it. And there are many other occasions. If you just take the current situation on Ukraine and Russia, it is literally impossible, prohibited, except for one or two occasions, that one opinion that challenges the U.S.-Canada-NATO narrative on Ukraine is blacked out. There is no freedom of expression here in Canada. We have no voice in the mainstream media to give our view, whether it's on Iran and whether it's on the issue of Ukraine-Russia conflict. So it's a very serious thing. We will see how far they will go against us. And for our part, you know, you can count on us. We are never intimidated.
Thank you very much, Arnold August, author and journalist and commentator. Thank you very much. Iran has once again rejected Ukraine's claims that it has provided Russia with combat drones for the war in Ukraine. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani called the allegations baseless and invalid. He said the Islamic Republic's stance on the war in Ukraine is quite clear and has been officially announced before. Commenting on the recent referendums held in four Ukrainian regions, which paved the way for their incorporation into Russia. Kanani said Tehran's based on its principal policy and always insists on fully observing other countries' territorial integrity. He added that Iran believes that any provocative action which disturbs the path towards peace and stability should be avoided. The spokesman noted that over the past few months, Iran has stressed the need for the warring sides to resolve their problems through political means. Russia takes another step to finalize the integration of four Ukrainian regions into its territory. Now, the upper house of Russia's parliament says yes to the move. The Federation Council voted unanimously to approve accession of Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia to Russia, and that is after the country's lower house, the State Duma, ratified the legislation on Monday. The laws will later be submitted to the Kremlin for President Vladimir Putin to put his seal of approval on these accession. Putin has earlier signed a decree for the formal incorporation of these four Ukrainian regions. Moscow held referendums in these areas, and locals voted overwhelmingly to join Russia, but Ukraine and its Western allies have called the votes illegal and a sham. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's new title of Prime Minister is simply a legal cover to gain immunity from legal prosecution, according to his many critics. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Agence France-Presse tells us more about the story. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's new title of Prime Minister, announced this week, could prove more significant abroad than inside the kingdom, where he already wields enormous power. The appointment by royal decree comes ahead of a deadline for U.S. President Joe Biden's administration to weigh in on whether Prince Mohammed qualifies for immunity from lawsuits filed in American courts of law. The 37-year-old de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, the world's biggest crude exporter, has been targeted in multiple such lawsuits in recent years, notably over the 2018 murder of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the kingdom's Istanbul consulate, which temporarily turned him into a pariah in the West. His lawyers have argued in court filings that he sits at the apex of Saudi Arabia's government and thus qualifies for legal immunity. Human rights activists and government critics immediately speculated this week that making Prince Mohammed bin Salman prime minister was a bold-faced attempt to strengthen the immunity claim and skirt legal exposure. Sarah Leah Whitson, executive director of NGO Khashoggi-founded Democracy for Arab World Now, or DAWN, told Agence France-Presse it was a last-ditch effort to conjure up a new title for him, in other words, a title-washing ploy. In October of 2020, 2 years after Jamal Khashoggi's murder, DAWN filed a complaint in the United States along with Khashoggi's fiancée, Hatice Cengiz, accusing the Saudi Crown Prince of involvement in a conspiracy that led to Khashoggi being kidnapped, bound, drugged, tortured, and assassinated. Last year, President Biden declassified an intelligence report that found the Saudi Crown Prince had approved the operation against Jamal Khashoggi, an assertion that Saudi authorities have denied. The legal threats to Prince Mohammed bin Salman in United States courts of law go beyond Khashoggi. He was also named in lawsuit filed by Saad al-Jabri, a former top intelligence official who fell out of favor as Prince Mohammed bin Salman maneuvered to become first in line to the throne in 2017. That complaint accuses Prince Mohammed bin Salman of trying to lure Saad al-Jabri back to Saudi Arabia from exile in Canada. Then, when that didn't work, deploying a hit squad to kill him on Canadian soil. A plot foiled when most of the would-be assailants were turned back at the border. In yet another case, Prince Mohammed bin Salman was accused by Lebanese journalist Qada Ouais of involvement in a scheme to hack her mobile device and disseminate stolen personal images to defame her and prevent her from reporting on human rights issues. The immunity question appeared to come to a head over the summer when a U.S. judge gave the Biden administration until 1st of August to say whether it believed Prince Mohammed qualified for immunity from prosecution. After Joe Biden visited Saudi Arabia in July, abandoning a previous pledge to turn Saudi Arabia into a pariah state, his administration requested an additional 60 days to decide whether to weigh in on the matter. The new deadline falls no later than Monday, 3rd of October. Britain's Guardian newspaper tells us more about the story. The Biden administration is seeking a 45-day delay in a court proceeding in which it has been asked by a U.S. judge whether it believes Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman could be granted sovereign immunity in a case involving the murder of the dissident Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Representatives from the U.S. Justice Department said in a legal notice filed on Friday that the department was seeking the extension after Saudi Arabia announced in a press release last week that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had been named as Prime Minister. Critics of the Saudi government said they believed the new designation was a maneuver designed to try to establish sovereign immunity protection for the 37-year-old prince, who is facing a civil case in the United States for his alleged role in the murder of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The legal case, which is being heard in a district court in Washington, D.C., had been filed against Prince Mohammed by Hatice Cengiz, Jamal Khashoggi's fiancée, and Dawn, a pro-democracy group founded by Jamal Khashoggi before he was murdered. The case has put the Biden administration in legal and diplomatic bind. The U.S. president entered the White House promising to make the Crown Prince accountable for Khashoggi's murder and to make him a pariah. But Joe Biden has already abandoned that pledge in favor of pursuing other political and foreign policy objectives. In a trip to Saudi Arabia this summer, President Biden fist-bumped the Crown Prince even after his own administration released a declassified intelligence briefing last year that concluded the Saudi Crown Prince had ordered the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Prince Mohammed has said he has taken responsibility for the murder, but he claims he did not order the killing. The Biden administration is not formally a party to the case, but was invited to weigh in on the matter. It had been given until 3rd of October by a judge hearing the Khashoggi case to respond to a series of legal questions about whether Prince Mohammed should be granted legal immunity, which traditionally is granted to a state's ruler like a prime minister, a president, or a king. In its two-page filing on Friday, the Biden administration acknowledged it needed more time after already being granted an extension to settle the issue because Prince Mohammed's recent elevation to the role of prime minister in Saudi Arabia.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa ala Ahli Baytihi at-Tayyibin at-Tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about a very important topic called prophethood, prophethood in Nahjul Balagha. This topic is one of the key, the discussion of prophethood is one of the key discussions in understanding the Islamic thought. So as you know, in this world at the moment, it is being led by various different forms of schools of thought, and every society, every country, every living system, let's say, we can say every lifestyle system, or life governing system, or social system, all of these systems have have some ideological basis. And these ideological bases are the one that actually are those fundamentals upon which that system is built. We call them schools of thought. We call them ideological reasoning. We sometimes call them worldview. All of these different things are the ones that form, rather, they are the ones that inspire the way a society grows, the way it develops, and the systems that are there inside it, in terms of, in terms of its leadership, in terms of its services, and etc., etc. And Islam also has, of course, a very powerful basis. We call it the Islamic school of thought. And one of the key elements of this thought is the issue of prophethood.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, our discussion in Nahjul Balagha with regards to prophethood will be mostly a discussion whereby we will bring about a few topics, a few subtopics, and then we will discuss various sermons or various statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha, which will actually give that actual, the actual matter, which will form the actual matter of our discussion, inshallah. Now, the first discussion that we want to have as an introduction is the fact that let us look at prophethood as a historical event, as a historical phenomenon. This is a very important thing. Why? Is because first we want to see it. We want to see the issue of prophethood as if we are observing it, on the onset, trying to understand what it is, without considering other factors or religious discussions and all that. We want to see it in a completely objective manner. We are not going to discuss about, wahi or revelation specifically, but we want to look at this issue of prophethood itself, because it's a phenomenon. Certainly in the history of Islam, in the history of humanity, we are sure and we know that the issue of prophethood, of messengerhood, has happened, is a phenomenon that has occurred. We don't have any doubt regarding that. Even those who do not believe in prophethood itself agree that there is a phenomenon that took place in history called prophethood. Now, yes, some people might have different understandings of what is prophethood and what is the actual matter of prophethood itself, what it means and what it requires and all that. But in general, what we want to say is that no human being that has studied history will deny the fact that in history there was a discussion of prophethood. There were prophets who came. There was someone called Moses alayhi salam who came. He's a historical phenomenon at the end of the day that happened, that occurred.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we were discussing the fact that if we look at history in an objective way, we will realize that in history there occurred the phenomenon of prophethood. No one can deny this fact. So, for example, Moses is a phenomenon in history. He came at a specific time and he came with a specific mission. Isa alayhi salam also, we know that he's a person who came, who was there historically. He had a specific mission. He came at specific times within a specific circumstance. And all of this is agreed upon. What we want to look at is look at this whole phenomenon of prophethood in a completely objective manner to try and understand what it was exactly, kind of as a bridge to understand it properly and then see it in the light of Nahjul Balagha. So first of all, we want to discuss that when this historical phenomenon of prophethood sprouted in history, What were the social circumstances? What were those? What was the foundational basis, or you can say the circumstance which led to the coming of prophethood? In what time in history, in what circumstance of history did it occur? In what social phenomenon or social situation did this happen? And then after that, we're going to discuss about the fact that was this prophethood only a product, or was it only for, or did it only belong to a specific group of people? Like, was it only for the rich people, or for the poor people, or a specific group of people? Was it for the weak and downtrodden, or was it for the knowledgeable people, the people of intellect, the people of thought? Which group of people were chosen to be prophets? What group can affiliate themselves with prophethood in terms of who was the prophet and who could be a prophet? Inshallah, we will discuss these discussions in the coming sessions. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
The new U.S. Defense Department plan called Civilian Harm Mitigation and Response Action Plan, which promises killing less innocent people in wars, seems to be sanitizing the brutality of American endless wars rather than announcing these interventions illegitimate. This plan tries to humanize the American wars around the world and their consequences. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay with us, please. The website of Responsible Statecraft wrote, "A few days ago, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin announced the completion of a civilian harm mitigation and response action plan, promising institutional changes so that American war making kills fewer innocent people. The plan is a clear step forward in the humanization of endless war, the ethically fraught project attempt to spotlight in the book Humane, How the United States Abandoned Peace and Reinvented War, which appeared a year ago in a paperback edition. The Pentagon commitment and the dynamics that led to it fit well with some of arguments in the book. While making American war less brutal is an uplifting project when it works, it can also function by intentional design to create a new kind of war that results in greater legitimacy. The plan is entirely open about this. It begins, "The protection of civilians is a strategic priority as well as a moral imperative. Abetted by critical outsiders and sympathetic insiders who decry the brutality rather than existence of wars, humanizing war reflects ethical progress in the fighting of American war while entrenching its performance." According to Responsible Statecraft, historically humanitarian activists have been dramatizing civilian harm for decades, and with a special intensity since the so-called War on Terror began after September 11, 2001. But when the order to develop an action plan came down in January, it was clearly in response to the extraordinary Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporting led by Azmat Khan, which gave unprecedented visibility to the cost of American war-making on civilians by documenting the extraordinary levels of casualties in air strikes. As a New York Times editor observed, military officials credited the work of Azmat and other Times journalists who rigorously reported on this project as important factors in driving change. And it is, no doubt, quite an accomplishment to prompt that transformation. As the plan explains, reforms will bring more concern for harm to military culture and organization. Read carefully. The plan amounts for now to a set of promises to hire more people at a Pentagon and in combatant commands to raise consciousness in hopes of further remaking American war in the crucible of care. The plan will also provide a hub for information gathering about far-flung operations conducted across service branches. The military, it says, should even consider acknowledging the episodes when it causes too much death and injury. The overall goal is to mainstream ethical compassion in American military operations without disturbing the eternal and necessary project of putting civilians in harm's way. But while good might come of it, for sure, more is at stake in such mainstreaming. The plan is being called sweeping by Khan and other New York Times journalists and welcomed as a great leap forward. The Defense Department finally prioritizes civilians in conflict, one prominent targeting professional put it. Of course, there is a lot to be desired in the plan even before attempts to implement it get underway. A triumph of bureaucratic newspeak, there will be a center of excellence for civilian casualties. The document that announces it and spells out some of the details leaves lots of room for maneuver when it comes to follow through. And it does not seem to apply to the Central Intelligence Agency, which pioneered drone strikes and continues to conduct them, as in the recent killing of Al-Qaeda leader. The website of Common Dreams also wrote, perhaps most glaringly on its own terms, the plan says nothing about the international law governing the conduct of hostilities, and low essential rethinking the American interpretation of it clearly is. Indeed, the January press release announcing the reform process presents the United States as already operating in line with its legal obligations not to kill too many civilians on a strong foundation of compliance with the law of armed conflict. But questioning whether the reforms pan out or whether they someday come to guarantee even more humanity in warfare misses the bigger point, which is that the humanization of war can work to legitimate war, especially when it works. When it comes from the Pentagon, indeed, that is the point. As we narrate in Humane, the humanization of American war dates from the aftermath of the Vietnam War, precisely when the international law requiring humanitarian care in the conduct of hostilities took its own great leap forward. The American story has been driven from the first by the alliance of critical outsiders composed of activists, journalists, and lawyers with sympathetic insiders within government and military. Across a considerable divide, they bicker over how far to go in making ongoing war more humane against the background of ongoing American militarism, even as questions about whether, where, and how long war is fought are relegated to the margins. According to Common Dreams, outsiders focusing selectively on brutality and especially civilian harm join a growing constituency of insiders within the military that hope to redefine the warrior's honor while managing public relations in the face of atrocious excesses. There could hardly be better proof of how these two forces work together in producing a relatively more humanized form of ongoing war than the new plan. The results are a good thing if the choice is between relatively more brutal and relatively less brutal war, but from the perspective of old and new calls for restraint in starting wars or fighting them forever, that is not always the choice. Humanitarians are characteristically silent about the justice or legality of war itself, while journalists also generally restrict themselves to factual proof of atrocity even when it takes place in the midst of aggressive war. For example, the path-breaking New York Times series on civilian harm, which dealt substantially with the war against Daesh in Syria, nowhere took up that war is generally regarded as illegal as such under international law, quite apart from its civilian harm. So there is a risk that the new reforms will abet a dynamic described in the first 20 years of GWOT, questions related to the justice, propriety, and legality of America's gargantuan military footprint were sidelined as the efforts were rendered a little less offensive in some of their human cost. The plan makes more of the same possible. And while Biden followed through on Trump's withdrawal from Afghanistan, he has re-engaged with the special forces in Somalia, where drones have also been deployed in operations. Overall, there may be less American war for the moment, leaving aside the forms of support for Ukraine. But it would be wishful thinking to conclude that any controls have been placed on the ongoing war posture, especially since Biden's move have come along with doubling down on Trump's confrontational position towards China. The Pentagon's promise of more humane war has to be put in that context. The controls that seem available concern how future wars are going to be fought, not whether a culture of restraint in fighting them at all ever takes root.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program. Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This hadith is about what brings about a good final outcome, husnul aqibat. You know, a lot of times people live in a very noble way. They live as believers, but towards the end of their life, right, they die in a state of disbelief, you know. And this is one of the very, this is one of the very important and significant dangers to a person's faith, you know. And that's why a lot of great, great human beings, great scholars, great saints, when they were asked, if any one of your prayers could be answered, what prayer would that be? And they replied, it would be that we die, you know, in a good state, you know, and the end of our lives, is a good end. We die, the end of our lives, be good and becomes good. So this is very important. Regarding this, so what can we do to have a good final outcome? Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said the following to some people in regards to this subject. If you want a good final outcome to your actions and for your soul to be taken while you are in the best of actions, then observe the rights of Allah. Do not use His bounties to disobey Him. Do not allow the fact that Allah is clement with you to delude you into negligence. And respect and honor everyone who praises us or those who embrace our love. Right? So the Imam alludes to certain things which are, if we observe, we can die in a good state. You know, the first is that we should observe the rights of Allah. Secondly, we should not use His bounties to disobey Him. Third, do not allow the fact that Allah is clement with us to delude us into negligence. And finally, respect and honor everyone who praises the Ahlul Bayt. If somebody honors the Ahlul Bayt, praises them, loves them, then we should also respect them, we should honor them, right? You know, and love them, right? These are things that can lead us to a good end, and we will die in a good state. In conversely, regarding the dangers of a bad end, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "The believer is continuously fearful of a bad end to his life, and remains uncertain of attaining the pleasures of Allah until the angel of death appears and takes his soul." All right, so this is one of those instances of that very important principle, which is that a believer is always between hope and fear. He's always between these two states. These are the two wings of a believer that carry him towards heaven. Right? He's always fearful. He's hopeful that Allah will allow him to enter paradise, but he's also fearful, you know, that he might, in the end, lose his faith. Right? So these are the two instances of that hope and fear that are necessary for all believers. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at what brings about a good final outcome in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. This